Darren Kelly joins us with JobSpot. Darren, what have you got today?
Just the one, John. Full-time HEV mechanic required. Bus and coach experience preferred. Flexible working hours available. Contact Joe on 086-259-6347 or email info@dunhuseofgalway.com. And if you need any phone numbers or email addresses, please call our reception on 091-770-077. Search hashtag Galway Jobs on social media or go to goabfm.ie/jobspot.
Thanks, Darren. You're welcome to Galway Talks with me, John Morley. And if you want to get involved and get comments into us, do so on our text and WhatsApp number. That's 086-383-3553. Phone Siobhan reception on 0917700077 and email comments at goabfm.ie. Before I go to Dave McCarthy to our comment lines very quickly, I thought that caller's comment about Liam Carroll not doing anything for Oran Mór was a cheap shot and felt like it should not have been broadcast. Well, we give a platform for everyone here on Galway Talks to express their opinions, and Liam Carroll, the Cathaoirleach of the county, he is doing his ball, so clearly that comment was a bit ignorant. So we apologise to Liam Carroll if he was offended by that. But I think Liam, no more than myself, he's a big boy and he can take the heat, and he's firmly in the kitchen. Another man who's in the kitchen and in the studio today is Dave McCarthy of McCarthy of an Associates. Dave, good morning.
Very good morning, Keith.
Oh my God. He's done it already. Get out.
John, well, you see, after 30 years of doing this, I'm about to get a stutter. That could be the last time it's happened.
You're on autopilot. I have to get the wooden spoon out, you know, and just to make you a cake. Dave, we've a lot of things, if you calm down now, we've a lot of things to get through today. Why making a knee-jerk decision on an investment when values fall can be fatal?
Yeah, sometimes people have a tendency to react to world events with making investment decisions, and, you know, other economic events that happen. But you need to analyse these and, you know, see how they will or may not affect you in the future as regards an investment that you might have, that you might be thinking of getting rid of because of something that's happened in the world, or something that a decision you're not making because of that. All I will just say to anybody listening this morning is be very careful about making a short-term decision based on events that happen out there out of your control. And the very simple rule of thumb is worry about what you can control, don't worry about what you can't control. And if you make a knee-jerk decision based on something like I've mentioned, 9 times out of 10, you're making the wrong one because you're making it out of fear.
Okay. Now, recent premium increases by VHI show a need to shop around, Dave.
Yeah, they've basically what they've done is they've withdrawn some of their plans and putting people onto other plans. And the bottom line here is that for a lot of people it's going to result in significant premium increases. Look, the whole area of health insurance for a lot of people is very confusing. And most of the time they will need advice. Now, the Health Insurance Authority have a very good website, hia.ie, and it is very informative. You can go in, you can put your current plan in, it'll give you details on comparative plans with other companies, and it's very helpful. Alternatively, you can go to somebody who's a broker for health insurance and get their assistance. But I suppose the things that people are most concerned about, if I change, will I lose cover and all those type of things. So if you go one of those two routes, it should help you to, first of all, reduce your premiums, and second, to get reassurance that you're not going to lose any of the cover you already have.
Okay, a question in. What do you think about using an online bank like Revolut for my main account?
Yeah, a lot of people use Revolut, as you know, as a kind of a secondary account. They find it very handy, they find it very convenient for a whole host of reasons, and I have no problem with that. But the problem I do have is if you decide to use it as your main bank account. And why do I say that? People have had issues where something has happened to do with their account. In other words, let's say for argument's sake, there was somebody who had a real problem with, now this is their own mistake, where they got scammed and money went out of their account. Now, it was their own fault, and I'm not, but the problem they had was contacting Revolut to discuss it. They could not get anybody on the phone. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get any response to emails.
Yeah.
And all I would just say is if you use an online bank like that and you have an issue where you need to talk to them, therein is where your problem will start. You still have that convenience with the main banks here. You can go into a branch, you can get them on the phone. It might take you a while, we all know that, but you can still have alternative ways of contacting them rather than online. And I would just say, if you're thinking of making one of those online banks your main bank, be be fair or wary of issues that could come up in the future and how you might be or may not be able to contact them.
Some people might say, though, that the main banks are moving in the direction of Revolut and other banks like that.
Yeah, look, they are, but they always have the other channels of contact, phone and going in person. These online banks don't and they won't have in the future.
Now, another topic, don't touch Trump media shares.
Yeah, I don't know whether you've seen it or not, but Trump has a company, obviously, called Trump Media Incorporation, which is the company that owns this, how would I put it, I don't know what to call it, common site, is the best way, Truth Social. But he's managed to convince certain investors in the States to float this thing on the stock market, and it did float on the stock market in the States about 6 weeks ago. It hit $70 a share. Today it's $22.
Okay.
And it's heading south at a rate of knots. This is a company that, in my opinion, should never have been allowed to hit the stock market. It's insolvent. They had $5 million in revenue last year. And it's a means for people, for him to try to get his hands on funds, and he is going to sell his shares to try and dig himself out of all these problems we hear about. And it seems to be also a way of people who support him to provide him with funds. In other words, in my opinion, they're real dopes, because you're buying an investment that you know is going to collapse on you. But I'm just saying, most people wouldn't have any interest in this, but there are people out there who do like a punt, and there are people out there who do like something exciting and a bit wild. Do not look at this, because you are guaranteed to lose your shirt. So all I will just say is stay well away from a share like this. I mean, and the kind of people I'm talking about might be people who have serious involvement in the cryptocurrency world. That's a conversation for another day. We've spoken about it plenty in the past. But don't don't touch these Trump shares. Oh man, I'm really having a morning here.
It won't be a Trump card.
Tongue twister.
What's the wild card with it, though? Do people think if he gets elected that it'll shoot up, or what's the thought process?
It's the thought process I find amusing, if it wasn't so serious for some people who are going to lose money. It's like a Ponzi scheme. You know what a Ponzi scheme is.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, I don't know how it's been allowed to happen. It's not an investment.
Okay. Another topic, claiming your contributory pension at the age of 66, defer it or not? That is the question.
Yeah, the government brought in the option for people to defer claiming their contributory pension, and you can defer it any time up to age 70 from 66. What's the benefit of doing that? Well, what they're saying is that the current contributory pension, 66, is 277. It goes up gradually. If you defer it, it increases. And at the top end at age 70, if that's what you wait until then, it's €337 a month, which is not enormous and it's not huge. I actually think this is a way of the government trying to defer people claiming their pension because they have a problem with funding older people in retirement in this country. Mm-hmm. There is an opportunity for some people who may not have sufficient number of contributions to get the maximum amount, and it might suit them. But other than that, I would say to anybody, forget about, if you're getting the full pension of 277, do not defer it. Because remember one thing, like, you're 66, we're talking about people's mortality here. By the time you get to 70, you may or may not be around. So you may never have claimed your pension. You might have departed us by then. So I would say, if you're getting the full amount, don't defer it.
Okay. Another topic, financial complaints process seems to favour the institutions, not the customer. For example, Ombudsman's Office overwhelmed and loophole in legislation if suing a vulture fund.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have problems with financial institutions for a whole host of reasons, and there is legislation and a process there which is supposed to help them. Right, and I say supposed because the system is broken. It's not working. We've had two examples of it recently. I mentioned this about the Ombudsman's report a few weeks ago that came out and said they are absolutely overwhelmed with the amount of complaints that they're receiving. And it's taking into years now, John, to settle these complaints. We also found out a few months ago in a Doyle committee that there is a gap in legislation that if you have a problem with vulture fund during a certain period of years, I think it was 2016 to 2019, something like that, you can't go to the ombudsman's office with the complaint. I mean, this is ludicrous. We have a situation where if you have a problem, it's favouring the financial institutions, not the customer. And we need to see a complete overhaul of the current position. And also, these financial institutions, as I mentioned before, they're intentionally not settling complaints, in my opinion, allowing it to go to the ombudsman's office and see what happens. And that is completely wrong.
Okay, another one that just came in to us, Dave. I have Vodafone shares and I find it impossible to get through to them. What advice could you give this caller?
Oh dear, I feel sorry for you. What happened was Vodafone was taken over many years ago and people ended up with shares through which were then shifted to the US. Right. What you're really going to have to do is spend a bit of time online and doing some research as to who is the registrar, who is handling the registration and of Vodafone shares. It is a company in the States. In fact, I think it's actually related to Verizon, the US company who would have issued shares to people here at the time. A lot of people, John, actually have just binned those shares because they're very small holdings in it. Mm. And it, for that listener, it may or may not be worth your while financially to pursue what I'm suggesting. But you're going to have to go online and just Google away. There's no point in ringing Vodafone.
Okay. Someone else says, John, you're a breath of fresh air. At least you got my name right, unlike Dave McCarthy.
Well done, listener.
Dave McCarthy of McCarthy and Associates with our financial advice. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week. And hopefully you'll learn my name by then.
Kuramaha good Sean.
We're back with Ask the Dentist next.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning, you're welcome to Galway Talks with me, John Morley, and we're looking at Ask the Dentist now.
Ask the Dentist, brought to you by Gate Dental Clinic. Let's keep Galway smiling. Don't wait. Call the Gate on 547-592.
I'm joined in studio by Dr. Brian Delgado. Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to have you with us. We're looking at the importance of baby teeth today. And first, what are baby teeth and why are they important?
Actually, baby teeth are very important. Although a lot of people don't tend to put so much of an interest in babies' teeth, but I mean, it helps them to chew, and most importantly, it helps them to speak. So that vocabulary at that young age, teeth make a huge impact on that.
And what are the consequences of not looking after these baby teeth? Because people will think that the teeth they grow up and they grow out and they get new teeth, but can damage be done there?
Yes, I mean, a lot of people's attitude is like, oh, well, it's not much point of taking care of them because they're going to fall out anyway. But I mean, they have a huge important role. And like I said, it's not only just the chewing and the speaking at the young early age, but losing teeth at an early age or an age when you're not supposed to be losing this has an impact further down the line. Mm. So for example, like those baby teeth also act as a space maintainer for the adult teeth to grow in. If those teeth are lost early, then you get complications down the line where the adult teeth tend to come in at a quicker rate than they're supposed to, and that can lead to overcrowding. And a lot of orthodontic cases later on in life may have been due to early loss of those baby teeth.
Okay. And so what exactly does happen if baby teeth are lost early? Like, I know some people years ago would be encouraging pulling out baby teeth early if they're wobbling, that, but that's not best practice.
Well, if it is at the wobbly stage, that's okay, because that's nature saying, like, look, it's coming out anyway, and you're just giving a helping hand. Probably you're going to accelerate that by about a week or so. Mm-hmm. But some of the molar teeth that might come out, say, for example, at the 9 or 10 years old, I mean, if those teeth come out at, say, for example, 6, then you're taking them out a few years early, and that causes that overcrowding business, which can be a problem in later on in life, yeah. Mm.
So take me through the maintenance of baby teeth. I suppose when they start getting 1 or 2, is that too early to start a little bit of brushing in that, or how do you maintain them at that age?
So a baby will have the full baby dentition at about 2 to 2.5 years old. And in terms of maintaining them, it's really no different to an adult teeth. I mean, there's baby toothpaste, and depends on the age of the child. This depends on the fluoride content of that toothpaste. But brushing twice a day and making sure that the child themselves actually learns how to brush the teeth and to do it well. And what I mean more is spending those 2 minutes of brushing, which most kids or most babies say after a couple of seconds, it'd be like, I've done the job, you know?
Yeah. And does it apply the same as with adult teeth, that you need to do a bit of flossing, etc.?
I mean, flossing would be ideal. To be honest, trying to get a flossing regime on a baby child is hard work. Good luck itself, yeah. But yeah, I mean, that would be ideal. I mean, if you can get your child to floss, that would be ideal. If I can get a kid to brush twice a day for about 2 minutes, I'd be more than happy with that.
And mouthwash as well?
I mean, mouthwash, to be honest, I mean, it's not that important. I mean, from having young kids myself, I mean, I find that they're very fussy with tastes of things, and even the toothpaste can be a problem. So I probably wouldn't encourage mouthwashes unless there is a problem of a high decay rate, and then the dentist would advise on that.
When do children need to come to the dentist and do appointments?
It's always a very good question, because I get that asked all the time, like when shall I bring him in? And I always say, as young as possible. I mean, even if he has only got several teeth, just bringing them in with the parents, just to get used to the environment, the chair, the building, you know, the smells in there. It's all part of their learning curve. So even if the dentist might sit him in the chair, might have a little look, even if he's just pretending, whatever, but it gets him used to that for later on in life.
Because, like, what can a dentist do at that stage in terms of, are there things you can identify from a young age with teeth and problems that might come in the future?
So normally, I mean, with teeth, you can get a decalcification. Teeth have actually grown with little minerals on them. So, I mean, there is a little bit of, you can see white spots on the teeth. Or a child that has a high sugar intake, you can already start seeing little black spots on the teeth, which might not be decay as yet, but they're very likely to turn into decay. And that's where, you know, the dentist role comes in the prevention side of things.
Okay. And then when they start moving into adult teeth then, and you might have a mix of baby teeth and adult teeth, what's the advice there?
So you're right, you described it well. So that there's a period where it's, which we call the mixed dentition, and that period is actually quite a long period of time. So the first adult tooth will start coming through at about maybe 6 years old, and that can last till about 14 or 15. So it varies from child to child, but there's a good number of years where that there is a process of losing teeth, getting new ones through, et cetera, et cetera. What I find is that, say, for example, your adult molars, which come about 6 years old, they tend to come without having lost any teeth. And then all of a sudden, they're quite far back. So I find sometimes that some kids will develop decay on those teeth before they do on their baby teeth. So it's important to make sure what's coming through and what needs to be cleaned, really.
Perfect. And do you have many babies coming in to get their teeth examined of late?
I mean, I don't see that many children myself as a dentist. There's others in the practice that do that, but I do see the occasional one. And generally, to be honest, kids are actually not bad patients at all, I find, as a general. I mean, a lot of adults are much worse to treat than kids, to be honest.
Perfect. Well, Dr. Brian Delgado, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. And we'll see you again. We'll see you again shortly.
Thank you. Bye.
Ask the Dentist, brought to you by Gate Dental Clinic. Let's keep Galway smiling. Don't wait. Call the Gate on 547-592.
Good morning and welcome into Galway Talks with me, John Morley. I'm delighted to say we're going to History Talks now, as we always do, a 11:45 on a Wednesday. And I'm joined in studio by James Heenan, who is an OPW guide at Portumna Castle. James, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Talk to us about the history of Portumna Castle. It goes all the way back to the 1600s.
It does, John, yeah. So basically, Portumna Castle was built by the fourth Earl of Clanrickard, named Richard Burke. The Burkes, I suppose, have a long history west of the Shannon in Connacht, okay? The Burkes initially would have been granted lands down in Munster, later granted lands up in Connacht. I suppose the Burke family became so powerful, they had more land than the monarchy in England, that at one stage there was actually a civil war amongst the Burkes, okay? So really, I suppose, the Burkes west of the Shannon in Connacht, there was a big division. So we had the Burkes of Mayo, the MacWilliam Burkes, and we had the Clanrickard Burkes of Galway. So the original seat of power of the Clanrickard Burkes would have been in Loughrea. So I suppose the early 1600s, Richard Burke, the fourth Earl of Clanrickard, there was 15 earls. It was a title that they got during the surrender and re-grants of land during the reign of King Henry VIII. But this particular Richard the Fourth Earl, he married an English lady named Frances Walsingham. They travelled around Europe. They were inspired by the gardens and the great houses of Europe. So came back to Galway and decided that they'd build a new house. So what better place to build a house than on the banks of the River Shannon on the north shores of Lough Derg? So this house would have been inspired, I suppose, by the French chateau, the English manor house, but it brought in defensive features of the earlier Gaelic tower house, I suppose highlighting what society was at the time, I suppose still very sort of warlike and troublesome. So I built this fine house, a seven bay, three-storey and basement at Portumna, lovely formal Renaissance-style gardens. Now, the Burkes, Richard was a very wealthy man and their main house is over in England. So really, this was nearly like their summer house, so to speak. But later, I suppose, after the Cromwellian period, we see the Burkes really taking up residence at Portumna Castle. The house itself, I suppose, really had a good history right up to, I suppose, 1826, until, unfortunately, the house went on fire. An accidental fire, or seemingly a lighted candle had set fire to some bed linen. And basically, the consequences were so disastrous that the roof, chimneys, everything collapsed on the house itself.
And what would that impact have been to the local community? Because it was still obviously functioning then.
Yeah, it was still a functioning house then. I suppose a seat of administration, but I suppose the Burkes themselves were politicians, so they were travelling to and fro from London. But the 14th Earl, I suppose, decided rather than restore the house, actually went to build a new house, which was referred to locally as the New Castle. Unfortunately, that wasn't finished. His eldest son, Lord Dunkellen, who had been fighting in the Persian Wars, had developed an illness of the kidneys, came home and passed away. And so the parents actually lost the interest and that new castle wasn't finished off. Later then, during the War of Independence, that new castle was actually burnt down, as the locals say, under suspicious circumstances.
Okay.
And later then again, that house then was, the stone was taken from the house to build a Catholic church in Portumna in the 1950s.
And did they continue to have an influence in Portumna into the late 1800s?
They would. Well, the 14th Earl, they had, I suppose, their estate was substantial. It was actually over 56,000 acres, okay? So obviously there was a lot of tenants on the land there. So the land stretched from Portumna right up to Woodford, around Loughrea, and actually up here near Galway City as well. I suppose the last Earl, the 15th Earl, was, I suppose, a notorious figure. He was a typical absentee landlord, and he actually lived over in London. So it was under his, I suppose, ownership of the estate that was much suffering, particularly up in Woodford, where there was over 200 evictions, 200 families evicted. In the late 1800s, there was a lot of land agitation, there was high rents, there was people being evicted, okay? Consequently, then you had brought in the Land Acts, okay, which were supposed to reduce rents and give fairer deals to tenants themselves. Later then, we've seen the setting up of the Land Commission, which basically bought these big estates and redistributed lands to tenants. But our miser Earl wasn't given into any of that. There was lengthy court battles up to 1915, where eventually the Land Commission won out. And basically, that big, huge estate was broken up and he was left with just 1,400 acres.
Mm. Now, the castle site itself today, when did the OPW manage to take control?
Yeah, so basically, I suppose, the castle itself, from the time of the miser Earl, it was left to a grandnephew of his, an English man named Henry Lascelles, who actually went on and married Princess Mary, the daughter of King George V and Queen Mary of England. But basically, they held that house and the 1,400 acres till just after World War II. Sold it off then in 1948, and that's when the Irish government stepped in and bought the estate. So most of the estate went to Quilcha, which look after our forestry, and the OPW, and they were given the Portumna Castle and the formal grounds. So they acquired it in 1948. Restoration works began in 1968. But I suppose it was the 1980s when we saw substantial work being done on the castle, and basically the roof and the chimneys were reinstated in 1994. When the grounds was opened up to visitors. So it's an ongoing project.
And what are the big features in it or treasures that you have that people can see when they go there?
Yeah, so obviously we have the castle, the exterior structure restored, you have the roof and the chimneys, but also we have lovely formal gardens there. We have a walled kitchen garden that both visitors and locals really enjoy. So it takes elements of the historic garden with vegetables and herbs, but also incorporates that with flowers. That's very, I suppose, in sympathy with the biodiversity of the area. And so if you're lucky enough, you can actually see red squirrels there and everything. So it's a lovely place to wander around. We also have a tea rooms there, and we have a fantastic art gallery.
Mm. I know there's a big event happening in the castle in the next while as well. The Annam Other Voices series is coming there, and some big acts playing as well.
This Sunday evening at 7 p.m, the OPW in conjunction with Other Voices, we have a musical performances with Moncrief, F.A. and Oisin Leach. It's at 7 p.m. This Sunday.
Brilliant. I believe we have two tickets to give away as well. So for anyone who wants to go see the Other Voices in Portumna Castle, all you have to do is text in Portumna now. So James Heenan, the OPW guide at Portumna Castle, thank you for joining us on History Talks.
Thank you, John.
Now, sticking with History Talks, we're joined in studio by Dr. Joe Mannion because you've launched a book, Anglicising Tudor Connacht, and it's the expansion of English rule in the lordships of Clanricarde and High Manny. Joe, good morning. Talk to us about this story. We're sticking with the same family here.
Yes, indeed. We're talking about the Burkes and we're talking about the O'Kellys. The Burkes being, of course, associated with the lordship of Clanricarde. This is based in the 16th century. So we're looking at, if you like, the expansion of English rule. We're looking at the expansion of English rule out of Leinster, across the Shannon, and into Connacht. And these two lordships were particularly worthwhile to study for the simple reason that, first of all, where Clanricarde was concerned, you had within the middle of Clanricarde, if you like, what you might call an English Pale or a Western, a small Western Pale, which stretched from Galway City, which was an English foundation, right across Strathenry. So you have that section in the middle of Clanricarde itself. So when it came to Anglicising and when it came to spreading their control, if you like, in west of the Shannon, this was a wonderful base to start from. So it was in the middle of Burke territory, and fortuitous for the Crown, one of the Burkes at the time, in 1538, decided that he wasn't the leader of the Burkes at the time, but he decided that it was that he wanted to step up a grade, if you like, and he went to meet the Lord Deputy at the time, Lord Leonard Grey, in Limerick, and he did just that. And the Burkes had been out of touch, if you like, with the Crown for a couple of centuries at this stage. But it brought about the rehabilitation of the Burkes with the Crown. And it eventually led to this gentleman who was Ulick na Gheon Burke being raised to the status of an earl by Henry VIII in 1543, which was a major thing. So that was and he took with that, when he took the title, he also took on the challenge, if you like, of anglicising his lordship. So lordship covered six baronies, stretching from Clare right down to Loughrea, and including also Kiltartan and Athenry and so forth. Mentioning High Manny then, it was located, if you like, to the east of Clanricarde, and some of it in Galway and some of it in South Roscommon. There was a very, very hostile relationship between the Burkes and the O'Kellys from the day that, if you like, the Anglo-Normans invaded Connacht in 1235 and took over and settled areas in it. And a lot of the areas that they settled actually were originally O'Kelly country.
Mm.
And just to mention, 300 years later, there's a lovely quotation, 1536, actually, it is from. So this is 300 years after the actual invasion and settlement of Connacht. A gentleman by the name of Robert Cowley was master of the rolls. He said, "The Burkes of Clanricarde be mortal hate for the Kellys." That'll tell you that all those years on, it continued, and they had been at war with each other in and out. So that's the beginning of the 16th century, if you like, and the Anglicisation of Connacht is about to begin and works from there.
And where do you take us then in the book?
There are three major initiatives taken on by the Crown in trying to spread their control, we'd say, over Connacht and the tribes in Connacht. The first was in 1542, and that was called the Surrender and Regrant Initiative. It was carried out under the control, if you like, of the Lord Deputy at the time, that was Sir Anthony St. Ledger. Ulic Nicgeon Burke, that I mentioned there, he surrendered his property, and then it was granted back to him again. But this time it was not under Irish law, it was now under English common law. So that's one major thing. And then moving forward a number of years, we go to the second one, and that happens in 1569. In 1569, now a lot has happened in the meantime, but in 1569 you have the Crown in trying to again introduce further control into Connacht and to introduce local and regional government according to the English standard that existed. So in 1569, and this is very relevant for your listeners indeed here, in 1569 the Shiring of Connacht took place, and with that you had the establishment of the County of Galway, and the County of Galway was made up of today it's made up of about 18 baronies. At that particular time it was something less, but six of the baronies were in Clanrickard, and you had four of the baronies in Hymany. So these were all west of the Suck. They were all in modern day County Galway. When County Galway was established, it was made up of a patchwork of lordships, including, we'd say, the Flaherty's country, we'd say, west of Galway. You had Clanrickard, as I mentioned. You had O'Madden country, which the Barony of Longford over in the Clonfertie area. In the north of the country, north of the county, you had the MacDavie Burkes, and so forth. So they were all put together, and they were all under the control of the Earl of Clanrickard at the time. So this would have been the second Earl, Richard Sosnock. So that's 1569. That's the second major initiative, if you like, to anglicise, to kind of transform Connacht into a small, if you like, English, say English speaking, and as well as that, with the English common law being ruled there or being used there. The third major initiative came in 1585. And that was what was called the Composition of Connacht. There was the first Composition of Connacht in 1577. It was brought in by the Lord Deputy, Sir Henry Sidney. It was really just a taxation system. But as successor of his, Sir John Perrott in 1585, revamped it, if you like, and he brought in a much more elaborate system. It was, again, a system of taxation, but what had happened here at this stage was that the lords and landholders in Connacht were expected to submit their lands, and as well as that, they were to forego their Gaelic titles. Now, that was a major step forward. And if you like, when you forego your Gaelic titles and the use of Breton law, this was the death knell, if you like, of the Gaelic system at the time. So we're now talking about real Anglicisation. So all of this had happened over a period, we'll say, from the 1530s up to 1585 or so. Central to all of that were the Burkes and the O'Kellys, of course. But there was one period after the establishment of the Connacht of the County of Galway where the Earl of Clanrickard's sons, Ulic and John, they went into rebellion on three separate occasions, 1572, 1576, and 1580. And during that time, they caused immense problems, and particularly for Galway City as well. So it would surprise you to think that in 1582, one of those, Ulick, became the third Earl of Clanricarde. And from there on, he was an absolute perfect example of a loyal citizen or a loyal servant of the crown.
Now, the book Anglicising Tudor Connacht, The Expansion of English Rule in the Lordships of Clanricarde and High Manny, you're launching it in Clare Galway Castle on Friday night at 8 o'clock, and it'll be launched officially by Professor Stephen G. Ellis. If people want to attend, how do they do that?
They're quite welcome to just drop along. It's an open invitation to anybody who wishes to come along and attend. We have a panel of six speakers on the night, one representing the Burkes of Clanricarde, another representing the O'Kellys of Hamani. Our Galway County Heritage Officer, Marie Mannion, will be there, and Stephen G. Ellis, as you have mentioned there, Professor Emeritus of History, Tudor expert indeed, from the University of Galway, and finally yours truly. So we're looking forward to a great night, and we're looking forward to a great crowd.
Well, Gnairi an Bóthairlat, Dr. Joe Mannion, the author of Anglicising Tudor Connacht, The Expansion of English Rule in the Lordships of Clanricarde and High Manny. Thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Gura míle maith agat, Seán.
All very interesting, I must say. And a reminder for you that this Wednesday evening from 7 o'clock, Gary McMahon presents ACE, Arts, Culture, Entertainment, Galway. Gary speaks to the Italian Cultural Institute about the upcoming Festival of Italian Film in Galway over the Maybank holiday weekend. We hear about the Liam Neeson Orchestra this Friday, while Gary has tickets to give away to the Metropolitan Opera at the iCinema on Saturday. Aoife Ní Cineála tells us about the new Irish language plan for Knocknacarra, plus a look at news of arts and culture events in Galway City and County, all online and on air on ACE with Gary from 7 o'clock this evening here on Galway Bay FM. The winner of those tickets to go see Annam in Portumna Castle is Anne-Marie Salmon. Congratulations to you. Should be a great night for all involved. I know Moncrief is one of the artist, and Anne-Marie Salmon is from Kiltormer in Ballinasloe in Galway, so congratulations to you on that. Coming up on the programme tomorrow, it's already very busy. We're having a look at road safety proposals from the Professional Driving Instructors Association following carnage on the roads since the start of this year. Lorraine Kane shares the new lifestyle and nutritional changes she has made as her health focus shifts during her perimenopause and menopause journey. There is an art sale for Gaza this Sunday. We look at that. There's a Connacht Tribune headlines. HBO Max and internationally renowned US TV host and comedian Conan O'Brien makes his Irish TV drama debut with T.G. Cahir's long-running drama series Ross na Rún. US political singer-songwriter to play in the Roisin Dubh later on tomorrow joins us in studio for a performance. Cara McDermott talks on Culture Corner about an event he's taking part in. We've Ars to Protect. We look at the Hare's Corner with Rosina Joyce, the biodiversity officer with Galway County Council. Sophie Coyle joins us for Music Mornings at 11:45, and we're looking forward to hearing all the tunes she has to play as well. So that's what's coming up tomorrow morning on the show. Now, a reminder, we're coming to Anarca, Clonburr, on Friday for Community Matters series. We're going across the city and the county this year, and this Friday we're broadcasting from Chivurca, Burke's Bar and Restaurant. If you are in the Clonburr area and you want to get involved, do get in contact with us. You can phone Siobhan on reception to be put through to me and have a chat about that on 091 770 0077. Email comments at goibfm.ie. And you can also get in contact through our text and WhatsApp line on 086 3833 553. We'd love to hear from you. We've already put a lot of work into it. A lot of guests have been organised for Friday. There's going to be a lot of music and history and kyol and sport and a lot of heritage in the Clonburr area. And some great personal stories as well. Some great work being done looking after a Syrian family who've moved to the area, and much more great work being done locally as well by their community council. So they're a strong community there in a beautiful part of Galway County, and we're really looking forward to getting stuck in Chivurca from 9 o'clock on Friday morning. We still have a big programme to go tomorrow, and we're looking forward to that as well. We do hope we have your company. And if you want to highlight some issues you want us to cover, there's a few of them that I'll be getting to after the programme today. We'd love to hear from you. You make this programme. It's your platform. And do continue to get involved tomorrow morning, Thursday, the 18th of April. And we will talk to you again. My thanks to Darren Kelly, who produced for me this morning. Siobhan, who took your calls on reception. And you, the listeners, for getting involved as well. Thanks for everyone who helped out on Galway Talks today. And a reminder that Ronan Lardner is up next with the Live Wire. And I'm looking forward to going seeing Oliver in the Town Hall Theatre tonight. A lot of comments came in this morning wishing them well on their opening night last night. I believe it was a great production. And one love to all involved there. Up next is Ronan Lardner with the Live Wire. From all of us at Galway Talks, stay safe and have a very good afternoon.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall Galway, located on the Monavay Road.